life is brighter when we understand the science behind it.
Hey team!
Hey!
Welcome back to the very last episode of Series 1 of Getting Brighter, the podcast where we shed light on the science of health, wealth, and society. We're breaking down the latest research and providing you with practical tools for positive change.
I'm Dr. Emily Hughes, a social psychologist.
And I'm soon to be Dr. Marsha Remsker, a behavioural scientist specialising in health psychology. For this very final episode, we've decided to talk about social media and its effect on mental health. This is something that is spoken about a lot, particularly in the media. And since its inception in the early 2000s, social media really exploded and completely changed the way we communicate, consume information, and just kind of function. It's essentially rewired our brains in some ways.
It has.
To the point where currently close to 4 billion people in the world have at least one of the three biggest social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And let's be honest, most of us have all three, or at least two of them. But 4 billion, that is half of the world,
has
at least
lot.
One of those profiles.
Yeah. And I guess given that transformational impact that technology of that kind has had on society and just the way we are, it's unsurprising how people have become really interested in understanding how these media types influence how we think and also how we feel. And I think this literature base is a large one. It's definitely kind of exploded since, as you say, social media came about. And I hope that kind of throughout this series, we've tried to do a good job in demonstrating that in psychology, there's a lot of nuance. Nothing is ever clear cut and there are always kind of two sides to every story. Mm-hmm. But never has that sentiment been so relevant than in the case of social media and that literature base. It's, you know, we'll get into it.
There's nuance all the way through.
Yeah.
So let's get straight to it. First of all, how do we even define social media use? How is it normally studied? Because that's very important for the whole context of the debate.
Yeah, there are a number of ways that different studies define use here. So typically, most commonly, use is defined in terms of frequency and duration of social media use. And sometimes in studies, this can just be referred to as general use. Most of the research we'll speak about towards the beginning of the podcast will adopt this definition. There are also some other common definitions that are relevant to the things we'll be talking about. So one is social network size, and this is the number of friends or followers that you might have on social media, and also the number of social media platforms used. So that's quite self-explanatory and intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
There are also a number of more specific definitions that relate to how social media is being used. So the first being active use. And this is where an individual uses the platform as a creator of content. So they're actively producing content on social media.
Okay.
Another is passive use. So this is where you aren't necessarily producing, but you're viewing content produced by other people as a consumer. So this would involve things such as browsing, scrolling, looking at profiles and pictures, and even updates of others. And then the final definition is problematic use. And use tend to see this in research that refers to social media addiction. So it can include things such as constantly thinking about social media and the way that social media can intrude on your ability to perform or concentrate on other tasks. So it can be associated with that sense of loss of control around use and boundaries around social media. And there can also be side effects of withdrawal when you're not using it anymore.
Mm-hmm. So all of those definitions you've just outlined are all so different.
Mm.
If you think about, you know, time spent on somewhere or just the number of platforms you use, that can tell you so many different things. So because there is such high level of variation between studies that have looked at this, we'll try and specify every time or most of the times what the study is referring to.
Yeah.
But do bear this in mind that studies themselves differ on what exactly is being looked at, and that might explain some of the effects.
Yeah.
Now, a bunch of popular science books, newspaper articles, blog posts have spoken about supposedly negative consequences and detrimental effects of social media for mental health, both for individuals and kind of on a social level, so for society. Now, others have argued for a more positive view or just for a more nuanced view of, you know, it depends. So let's get some clarity here. What does the science say about the relationship between general social media use, mood, and mental health?
Yeah, so it's a tricky one because I think, in short, both of these perspectives, you know, that there are negative consequences but also positive benefits, both of these are backed by academic work. So evidence from individual studies is extremely mixed, So social media could be referred to as a double-edged sword in mm-hmm. that sense. And so I suppose mixed opinion is also unsurprising because someone could essentially cherry pick findings to support mm-hmm. whatever direction they felt like arguing it in.
Yeah.
So one thing that we can do to get some clarity around this is to look to meta-analyses. So these studies which pull data from across individual studies to try and understand the general pattern of results mm-hmm. and to see whether we're able to make strong conclusions either way. So first of all, time spent on social media has been investigated in relation to a number of different outcomes. So let's start off really broadly and think about general well-being. So our general well-being day to day. There's a nice meta-analysis here, which looks at 61 studies with around 20,000 participants. And what you see here is that looking at psychological well-being overall, the more time spent on social media, the worse your well-being seems to be. And this is a significant correlation, but it's a weak one. So when you break this down and look at kind of different indicators of well-being, the relationship between time spent on social media and positive indicators of well-being, so things like self-esteem, life satisfaction, this relationship is close to zero. So nothing going on here. But the relationship with negative indicators, so things like depression and loneliness, was present but weak. This is a really small correlation here. And so you can see what is driving that. It's that slight negative relationship.
Yeah. Okay. So small effect of time spent on social media for general well-being.
Yeah.
The next outcome studies have looked at quite extensively is depression. So this is based on a sample of over 90,000 people. So again, lots of data aggregated here. And the studies find that the more time you spend on social media, the higher your risk of exhibiting symptoms of depression. Again, this correlation is quite small, but it is significant.
Yeah. And so slightly larger here in the case of depression than when you look at well-being generally, which is important to note, I guess.
Relatively, I guess, is good to rank them. When we look into this relationship further, we see that a recent meta-analysis found that adolescents in particular, the more time they spend on social media daily, the higher their risk of developing depression, to the point that adolescents with higher daily time spent on social media have a 60% increased risk for depression. That's quite a high increase.
Yeah.
The risk of depression increased by 13% for each hour daily that they spent on social media. So we see that there is this, what we'd call a dose response relationship. Yeah. So, you know, the more time, the higher the risk.
So perhaps something particularly important there for adolescents. And I think we'll come back to that a little bit towards the end of the episode. Another interesting aspect to take into account is the effect of social media on body image. Data here comes from a sample of around 2,000 females between the age of around 10 to 46 year old. And what you see here is that the more time spent on social media, the greater internalization, and what we mean by that is endorsement or agreement with the thin ideal. So that this is the ideal body image to aspire to. And this correlation here is significant and of small to moderate effect size.
Okay.
So this is the largest effect we've discussed so far and with a really meaningful effect. So this means that it's likely to translate into the real world. Mm-hmm. And it's also thought to be a likely mechanism behind the link between social media use and body dissatisfaction. Interestingly, the use of appearance-related features, so things like the number of selfies you post, how long a user spends viewing profiles or viewing comments from others, this has a stronger relationship with internalization than a more general use on social media.
Okay, so it is more about what you're doing on social media and whether you're using it to focus on appearance rather than general use and time spent on it.
Yep.
So the evidence so far was kind of for a number of different social media types. But if we look at specific platforms, Facebook is the one that has been looked at by far the most, probably because it's one of the older ones and researchers have just had more time to study it.
Yeah.
Specifically, Facebook use has been investigated in relation to depression. This relates to a sample of about 16,000. So again, these sample sizes are all really big and we can get some firm conclusions from them. So the more time spent on Facebook and the greater the frequency of someone checking Facebook were associated with higher levels of depression. And this had, again, a small effect size. Studies also looked at loneliness. So here we aggregate about 9,000 people's worth of data. And again, there is a positive correlation between Facebook use and loneliness. But in this particular instance, authors of this study say that the relationship should be interpreted in a way that people that are lonelier use Facebook more often rather than people using Facebook more often becoming lonelier.
Yeah.
So we see that there is nuance when it comes to which way the causality goes.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one to be able to get that sense of direction there, because that's something that often correlations are kind of obscuring from data. But I think the explanation for that is also really interesting. And a lot of that was down to shyness and also a lack of social support in real life. And so being able to derive that from online social media. Mm-hmm. And this explanation is in line with something known as the social compensation hypothesis, which is essentially that people are able to use more online applications to compensate for perhaps their social disadvantages offline. So social media here isn't hindering, it's helping. It's a useful tool. And I think that's why kind of this cause and effect research is so important, to kind of tease out some of those effects and detangle them.
Mm. And it's completely possible that we might see similar effects on other social media platforms, or they might be completely different. At this stage, we're just not able to say, because there is nowhere near as much evidence on different platforms. So there's very few, for example, meta-analyses on things like Instagram and Snapchat and TikTok. Research into the newer platforms really has some catching up to do still.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really interesting to maybe look at the different kind of intentions behind each social media platform, because they do differ. For example, Facebook might be a bit more about social networking and maybe messaging people, whereas there are some other more visually targeted social media platforms as well, like Instagram and TikTok, and they might actually have different effects.
Yeah, exactly. They're very different when you think about it. But what you find when averaging across these different social media platforms, so much research has been done, so many meta-analyses, that these meta-analyses themselves have been meta-analyzed to try and provide us with a really clear, simple take-home message. And in short, this is that available meta-analytic evidence does not support the widely held and often reported assumption that social media use has, on average, severe detrimental consequences. Meta-analyses only provide very weak support for the negative effects of social media in relation to things like life satisfaction, depression, indicators of well-being, and effect sizes are small, often with a high level of variation across studies. So it's not, you know, super clear cut across the board in all research. And links with body image are somewhat stronger, as we discussed, but still small to moderate at best.
Okay, so far we've looked at studies looking at general use of social media and things like time spent on it. And we see that actually, if there's not really evidence for those troubling effects, where did that sentiment come from then? Is there research that does find more troubling effects there?
Yeah, so there is. And typically we see these effects being reported from studies that investigate problematic use specifically. So as I mentioned at the very beginning, this is where it becomes a social media addiction. So data from a really large meta-analysis of 122 studies with nearly 250,000 participants, which is a lot of participants. This study finds the relationship between problematic social media use and life satisfaction and self-esteem to be small, whereas problematic use with outcomes such as depression and loneliness are moderate. So this is our strongest evidence of a negative relationship here in terms of these more negative indicators.
Okay, so it's good to see where those more severely negative effects are coming from and that they are at least somewhat substantiated by the literature. So now let's look a little deeper into why some of those effects might come about. So from a psychological perspective, social media can influence our mental health either way, but through what processes?
So there are a few main processes at play when we use social media, which can influence how we feel. And I like to think of these in terms of the three C's. So it's about how we curate ourselves, how we're comparing ourselves to one another, and also how we're connecting with one another. So keep those three in mind as we go through this section. So the first process at play is self-presentation. And this refers to the fact that social media provides us with the opportunity to curate the way we present ourselves. But this isn't always a good thing. So inauthentic self-presentation on social media is associated with elevated levels of social anxiety and lower self-esteem. But authentic self-presentation is associated with the experience of positive emotions and increased life satisfaction.
That's good.
Yeah, exactly. And experimental studies, so where you're kind of manipulating the way that people use social media, these studies have shown that viewing one's own social media profile leads to increased self-esteem. But crucially, these profiles need to be an accurate representation of themselves to see these effects.
Okay. The second C there is social comparison. So social media provides us with an opportunity to compare how we stack up against our peers, especially those we see on social media. This can lead to either positive or negative effects, depending on how we compare. So whether we compare upwards or downwards.
Mm.
Now, upward social comparison is where we perceive ourselves to be kind of worse than whoever we're comparing ourselves mm-hmm. to. And it can lead us to feel worse. This can happen when we compare our lives against the kind of perfectly curated presentations of others where we might perceive them as being successful, beautiful, social, whatever it is that we see as valuable. And
yeah.
that is depicted on social media. Think of the saying, comparison is the thief of joy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And if we look back at the meta-analysis of Facebook use and depression mm-hmm. that we mentioned earlier, we see there that higher levels of depression were actually associated with greater upwards social comparison.
Mm.
And that this has a medium effect size. So this means that actually it might not be the use itself that's driving it, but
yep.
the upward social comparison on social media that we might engage in.
Yeah.
Upward social comparison can also lead us to experience the fear of missing out or yep. FOMO, because we see, again, other people being social. And this has been linked in studies to negative emotions, fatigue, stress, and even impaired sleep in young people.
Yes, but downward social comparison does not seem to have this negative effect mm-hmm. on well-being, and it may even help foster it. So when we can see a more truthful depiction of a person, so perhaps people going through failure mm-hmm. or not always looking so perfect, this can lead us to feel better. So a study finds here that people report feeling worse about their own body when they view pictures of others looking great. But if it's a case that you see an unflattering picture of someone else, so, you know, they're showing you all sides of themselves and doing mm-hmm. a bit of Instagram reality perhaps, then that can lead you to feel better because that's an example of a downward comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third C here relates to connection and the sense of social capital that social media can provide us. So here we have an opportunity to constantly interact and connect with people that we're close to. This is known as bonding social capital, and also those we're more distantly acquainted to. And this is known as bridging social capital, because it's about building and enhancing that social connection.
Yeah.
And meta-analyses find this relationship to be positive and of moderate effect. So again, one of the largest effects here that we've seen in the literature and that we've seen reviewed today, which is great because it's a positive outcome.
Yeah, that's really encouraging.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And when thinking about how this relates to well-being, social capital and our social ties can be found to increase positive psychological well-being indicators such as self-esteem and life satisfaction.
Yeah, that makes sense. What might be driving that, though, those increases in self-esteem and life satisfaction?
Yeah, good question. So a wide range of studies show us that social media is really helpful in providing us feedback. So it's able to satisfy our need for that emotional support and also informational support. So when we need to find something out, we can often try and search down the answer on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And this enhances our perceptions of social support and our ability to receive it. Research also finds that social networking platforms enable people to remain in touch with a social group even after physically disconnecting from it. So it can help you maintain your social capital by moving your offline interactions online when these would have otherwise been lost by your physical distance.
Mm-hmm.
And despite concerns, there is no clear evidence that individuals who use social media frequently are the same people who experience a decrease in face-to-face interaction.
Okay, so social media isn't necessarily replacing or ruining our social skills.
No. And actually, there is some evidence that social media use and face-to-face interaction are associated. So if you are actively using social media and speaking to people online, then it's likely that you're also interacting widely with various people offline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually found that being more passive online, so perhaps scrolling and not actually doing anything and not connecting with others, is what is found to decrease face-to-face and even virtual interaction and also reduce your well-being. So if you are being active and connected with one another, then you're probably doing that offline and you feel good about it.
Great. Right, let's move on to the second section of the podcast, Debatable, where we address some open questions and points of contention in the literature.
Mm-hmm.
So given that the evidence base is so mixed, what is it that determines the relationship between social media use and mental health effects, and which way that relationship goes?
Mm-hmm. So it's really important, I guess, to clarify some terminology that is relevant to this discussion and kind of understanding and answering that question. So in research, when we're looking at factors that determine whether there is a relationship between two variables, so does X affect Y, we are looking at what we call moderating variables or moderating factors. And these are factors that determine whether there is a relationship between X and Y and what that looks like. So they determine its strength, its direction. So in this case, whether that relationship is positive or negative. And to help us identify some of these relevant moderating factors, we can look to meta-analyses. So here we're going to make reference to a meta-analysis of 63 studies that were conducted between 2005 and 2016. And this meta-analysis distinguishes between positive mental health indicators, so things like life satisfaction, well-being, positive affect, so positive emotions, and negative mental health indicators, so depression, loneliness, anxiety, envy, and negative emotions. So it kind of splits the two types. Mm-hmm. So you've got these two categories that they're looking at as their outcomes. So the first moderating factor that the meta-analysis looked at was gender. And what they find is that the relationship between social media use and negative mental health indicators was stronger when the percentage of women in the sample increased. So women are more likely to experience the negative consequences of this usage. And this could be because the link between depression and behaviours of social comparison, so those that we've just discussed, such as, you know, using social media to compare your lives with the lives of others, and also feedback seeking in social media, so using social media to see what others think about how they look. These behaviours are just more prominent for women in general, and that could explain that link there.
Mm-hmm. The second possible moderating factor is age. And while meta-analysis actually don't find age to moderate the effects of social media use on mental health, this is most likely due to insufficient age range reported in the studies to be able to kind of compare across groups rather than age actually not mattering for these effects. And actually, literature has found that specific effects do exist in relation to the number of social media platforms used by a person for anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And age is actually found to make a difference here in terms of which direction the relationship goes, so whether social media makes you more anxious or less anxious.
Mm-hmm.
They found that for adults over 30, the use of more social media platforms increased anxiety, whereas for younger people aged 18 to 29, mm-hmm. the use of more social media platforms actually decreased anxiety.
Okay.
So this is a really interesting example of a moderator completely changing the type of effect something has.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's not a initially intuitive finding. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's quite surprising to some people. Was there any explanation for that? Why might that be the case?
Yes, so they actually found that these effects were over and above the influence of other demographic variables that might come into play when you look at different age groups. So, you know, things like general well-being or the level of education you have, the level of income. So all of these things they controlled for statistically. And they still found there was this effect of age on anxiety. And this might be because multitasking required to kind of keep on top of multiple social media platforms can actually lead to more depression and anxiety. So this has been confirmed. But younger generations are just more accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. We're just better because maybe we've been doing that all along. And that could kind of protect against any negative effects. And this is why we might see this moderating effect of age.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cultural background is another factor that's been examined as one that could change that relationship between media use and outcomes. And the relationship between social media use and positive mental health indicators has been found to be stronger in samples from collectivist cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be because individuals from collectivist cultures place more focus in obtaining that social support from social media,
mm-hmm.
while those from individualistic cultures might emphasize seeking entertainment or using it for other reasons. Mm-hmm. So again, it's about why you're using social media.
Yeah.
And there's been evidence to suggest that using social media for socializing is positively linked to well-being, whereas using it for entertainment purposes, you know, just scrolling through videos and watching and consuming content in that way has no such relation. So it's really important to think about why.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another factor that plays into what type of findings we see is simply the way social media use is defined. We hinted at this at the very beginning of the episode, and these aren't strictly moderation analyses, but they are kind of one of the factors that I think is worth discussing here.
Mm-hmm.
So the relationship between social media use and mental health is actually dependent on how social media use is measured.
Mm.
A positive relationship between social media use and positive mental health is found only when social media use is measured as network size.
Mm-hmm.
So the number of friends you have on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram followers. That might be because online friends can give you emotional and practical support, particularly for people that might not have those connections.
Yeah.
So users with more online friends can also get more kind of bonding or bridging social capital, as Emily discussed earlier, more emotional support, more companionship, and also a stronger sense of belonging.
Mm. But then when you look and see social media being defined more generally. So again, speaking about time spent on social media or the frequency of social media use, the only significant relationship you saw in this specific study was between social media use and negative mental health indicators. So this again could be because social media time might lead to information overload or online regret, or also being distracted from more meaningful tasks that we need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
There is also mounting evidence that supports the idea that active social media use is associated with greater well-being, whereas passive use is associated with poorer well-being. And this is an idea that is reflected in a model known as the active-passive model of social media use, very aptly named. And we have some experimental evidence testing this model. So this study here is looking specifically at Facebook, but they had people in a lab here, and people were cued to either use Facebook passively or they were cued to use it actively. And those that were cued to use it more passively had a decline in affective well-being over time. And the mechanism for this is thought to be because it increased envy. So this is controlling for other social media use and their social interactions online. Passive Facebook use also predicted loneliness, whereas active use did not. So when people use social media actively, this can lead to improvements in well-being. And it seems to do so, again, by this kind of social capital, social bonding mechanism. And of course, there is always still going to be nuance in this relationship. So
always.
There are some conflicting findings in the literature, and it's thought that much of this can be explained by the fact that there are still going to be additional features of your interactions online that are going to influence whether active or passive use, again, is helpful or harmful.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're thinking about active use, this is going to be a really good thing for you if it's reciprocated, but if it's not, then this isn't going to be a great thing. Also, it's important to think about how people are responding to you. So if they're responding warmly, then this is going to be great. If they're not, then active use isn't going to see those beneficial outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
When we think about passive use, again, the way that we are comparing ourselves to one another's when we're scrolling through social media could make a difference here. So if we're comparing upwards, that's going to be detrimental to mental health, whereas downwards, that might make us feel good about ourselves. And it also could depend on the positivity or the negativity of the content that we're seeing as we're scrolling. So if this content is negative, then that's going to have a negative influence on us. And especially if that negative content is relevant to ourselves. So it stops and makes us think and look, we're more likely to kind of digest that.
Mm-hmm.
And that will have a negative effect.
Yeah, making sense. Now, having just considered all of this evidence, let's move straight on to Doable, where we give actionable steps based on what we've just discussed. So how can we mitigate against potential negative effects of social media for mental health?
Yeah, so this is really the key, isn't it, to understand what we can do. And I think consensus is growing that social networking sites, social media, are not inherently good or bad, but much of this depends on how they're being used. And so these are just some tips that we think you could use to help you use social media in a more positive way. So the first thing to think about is that, as we've discussed, time spent on social media isn't necessarily a bad thing for all. We see small effect sizes here and lots of variation across studies. Mm-hmm. But whether or not you should be spending extended periods of time on social media will likely depend on whether you are an active or a passive user. So the first experimental piece of research around this was released in 2023. So I was very excited when I found this. And this evidence demonstrated that spending more time on social media is only likely to have negative consequences if you're using it passively. So the advice here is that if you're engaging actively, then slightly heavier periods of social media activity. So this is as small as an increase between if you are using it for 5 minutes before using it for 10 minutes could be more beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you recognize yourself from this podcast and our discussions as being a more passive user, then it might be worth considering limiting your social media use. So heavy passive users of social media are just more likely to experience those negative consequences, such as feeling disconnected, experience stress, and also kind of lower well-being.
How interesting that even like 5 minutes could make a difference either way.
Exactly. And it's important to note, we're talking about minutes here. So this isn't saying, you know, go and spend hours and hours on social media. And if you're being active, then that will lead to positive outcomes. We can't assume that these benefits would continue exponentially and just keep increasing. We don't have any evidence to speak to that. But what this means is that slight increases could be beneficial to you.
Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are considering limiting your use, a good place to start might be by limiting your use of social media just before sleep or in the space where you sleep, so in the bedroom. We already know that there is quite a strong relationship between time spent on screen-based devices generally and reduced quantity and quality of sleep. So the more time you spend using screens, the poorer your sleep and the less you sleep. This relationship is particularly strong when devices are used just before sleep or in the evening hours. And this is particularly important in the group of adolescents and young people.
Yeah.
So if you remember previously, we spoke about the link between social media use in adolescence and depression.
Mm-hmm.
And authors actually suggest that it might not be social media use itself that is generating this link. It might be the impact social media has on the sleep quality and sleep quantity in adolescence. And actually, staggeringly, 1 in 5 young people regularly wake up in the night to send or check messages on social media.
Wow.
So you can completely see how that would be interfering with sleep quality and quantity.
However, when you are using social media, the key practical takeaway from this research base is to become a more active rather than passive user of social media. Interestingly, the majority of time, users are found to engage with social media passively, despite the fact that most social media is intended to foster social relationships and interaction.
Yeah, I mean, they're called social networking sites for a reason.
Exactly. So you can be a more active user by logging on to social media with intention, posting, commenting on other people's posts, messaging, and also seeking or offering informational and emotional support to others. You can also avoid being a passive user by catching yourself when you do any of the following. So logging on because you're bored, even doom scrolling. So I know that's kind of made its way into public lexicon. So that's essentially spending large amounts of time reading negative news or arguments or debates on a news feed, and also fixating on profiles or stories of others. So FOMO, the fear of missing out, tends to be associated with this information overload and more compulsive passive use. So perhaps that's a reason to stop going on social media for the sake of it because you're bored.
Mm-hmm. Another thing to possibly consider would be changing your long-term relationship with social media. So becoming more active over the long term. This is possibly a better strategy than just trying a one-off or a short-term change in approach, such as taking a short break from social media completely. And this is because if you're currently an active user, stopping for a short amount of time could actually lead to a reduction in positive emotions you're getting from using social media. And there's little evidence that it will have a beneficial impact for passive users as well, even though not all of the science agrees here. And presumably, once that one-off vacation is over, you're just going to go back to your old patterns and just continue with those potentially negative effects.
Yeah, this makes me think of all the times that I've gone and deleted an app, a social media app from my phone to have a bit of a break, only to, you know, go and reinstall it a week later and just carry on using it the same way I did. So there's no reflection there in terms of long-term change of pattern. And maybe if you are able to do that, then that's really the thing that's going to make the difference.
I think we've all done that.
Yeah.
Periodically deleting social media apps is just part of the pattern by now. Trying to shift your patterns towards more active use over time can be particularly important if you are someone who is quite prone to comparing yourself to others.
Mm.
So that's what psychologists would call kind of being high in social comparison orientation.
Mm.
So if statements such as, I always pay a lot of attention to how I do things compared to how other do things ring true to you, then you might be high in social comparison orientation. And people that are high in this trait are more likely to make more upward social comparisons, so those kind of potentially detrimental ones, and suffer more in terms of how they see themselves and their own well-being.
Mm.
But importantly, if you're mostly using social media passively, this can make you more likely to engage in that upward social comparison. So you might want to consider swapping your browsing or scrolling for connecting with others instead.
And finally, when you're sharing actively on social media, try to share authentically if possible. So this form of self-presentation will help you feel better for being truer to yourself. You know, it's hard enough to manage comparing ourselves to others.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you need to do is compare yourself to an unrealistic standard you set for yourself.
Yes.
But it will also help others by reducing the prevalence of upward comparison and increasing the prevalence of downward comparison on social media more generally.
Exactly. But also, do be mindful of the control you have over what you see on social media. So be mindful of who you're following and who you're surrounding your virtual self with, if you will. Reflect on whether the people in your feed are actually sharing things truthfully. This is also why it's really important to connect with people meaningfully on social media and recognize that there's actually more to the person than that profile, and that profile might not always be accurate. Studies actually show that Instagram browsing of profiles of acquaintances or influencers, so people for whom you can't necessarily validate whether that content is true, or people who are more likely to use filters or Photoshop, that kind of use is associated with negative changes in psychological well-being.
Yeah.
So curating your feed to people you know are authentic and people who make you feel positive will actually help you feel better.
Yeah. And kind of overall, it's really important just to caveat all of the tips that we've discussed by saying that ultimately, the most important thing is what works best for you. So if being more active and sharing all aspects of your life and self in a bid to be more authentic doesn't sit right with you, then it's ultimately not going to be beneficial to your mood or your well-being.
Yeah, that could actually be completely inauthentic to you, and that would make you feel worse. It's all getting a bit better now.
But yeah. So just take it all with a pinch of salt and just reflect on what would work for you and your situation.
Exactly. That ultimately is the most important thing.
Yeah. And so that is it for today. And that is it for this series. So thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in and listening.
Yes. Thank you so much to everyone who has engaged throughout the whole series. Anyone who has subscribed, commented, given us any feedback. It was really wonderful for us to see how this podcast has made a difference and how we can make it even better.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate all of your engagement and it's been great to see. So if you've been able to get brighter from this podcast, then make sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. And once you're there, we'd really appreciate you leaving us a review of anywhere up to 5 stars. If you have any feedback, questions, or suggestions for a potential future series, or you're just nosy and want to put faces to the names, then you can still find us on all of our socials at Get Brighter Pod.
And if you're a bit more old school, we also check our emails at getbrighterpod@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear what you have to say, maybe about the whole episode or about what could be to come.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank the Southwest Doctoral Training Partnership one last time for supporting this podcast. And to finish off with, our disclaimer. The Getting Brighter podcast is separate from our research and teaching roles at our respective universities. However, it is part of our shared passion for communicating science in an accessible and enjoyable way. Any advice given does not consider your unique individual circumstances, and we encourage you to seek professional guidance before making any significant lifestyle changes. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Woo!